Support for this episode comes from Lawyers Mutual Insurance Company, who have proudly provided California attorneys with specialized professional liability coverage for over 45 years. And did you know? Lawyers Mutual offers competitive specialty rates for their members who act as a neutral, either on a full-time or part-time basis. So, as part of their arbitration mediation specialty program, all members receive an individualized premium based on the areas of practice their firm handles. This allows Lawyers Mutual to adjust rates annually, and as you build your mediation practice, your premium will reflect the portion of your time spent working as a neutral. To learn more about how this great program can benefit your firm, visit lawyersmutual.com today.
Welcome to the audio edition of BHBA's mediation training. In this episode, your host, Matthew Lane of Lane ADR, will guide you through strategies for successful online mediations. Let's dive in.
Hello, and welcome to Advanced Dispute Resolution, also known as Strategies for Successful Online Mediations. I'm exhilarated to be sharing this topic with you and spending time discussing how to maximize the ability to settle cases over Zoom, Teams, and other online means. Very briefly, who am I? I'm a full-time mediator and owner of Lane ADR. Prior to the pandemic, I was a full-time litigator, both as an assistant U.S. attorney in the Central District of California. Also, I was an attorney who represented clients in both large and small law firms. In my capacity as an attorney, I had the good fortune of mediating hundreds of cases as an advocate. And as a mediator, I have now mediated hundreds of cases as a mediator. I look forward to discussing this topic with everyone. And let's just start with the big global idea of why are we here? We're here because online mediation is no longer the quote-unquote alternative. So obviously before the pandemic, most mediations were conducted in person. They were traditionally at one location. Everyone who participated would plan to travel there. At the very least, it would often require driving across town, driving in traffic, parking, figuring out where I need to be, how am I going to get lunch, what am I going to do to make sure I'm comfortable in the mediation. And obviously, depending on how many people were participating in the mediation, at times it could include extensive or expensive costs and time associated with mediation. And so obviously you see the asterisk there on the slide that mediation was developed and has been a means to more efficiently and more cost-effectively resolve disputes. It still is more cost-effective and more efficient than trial, than litigation, and oftentimes and primarily arbitration as well. As the pandemic forced people to rethink things throughout the world, a very noticeable change in the legal community was the very quick pivot to mediating online. Personally, I was in the midst of the pandemic in 2020 when I decided to open my own mediation practice. And prior to that, I had mediated a handful of times as an advocate on Zoom, but it became clear to me that anyone opening a practice at that time needed to be very well versed in how to mediate online. And so as I've continued to grow my practice and continue to mediate since then, I have mediated in person and I still enjoy mediating in person from time to time, but the vast majority of my cases have been mediated online. And like many other mediators with whom I've spoken, the success rates continue to not be necessarily based on how the mediation is conducted, whether it's on Zoom or in person, but rather the cases that are ripe for settlement seem to be fine and able to settle online. And so as we step back from all this debate over in person or Zoom, I want to refocus the thought that I'm not here to advocate for Zoom replacing in-person mediation, but rather to articulate some examples of how Zoom can encourage people to get their cases settled in a much more efficient and much more effective manner. And that's why we talk about this form of advanced dispute resolution. Just like when mediation became the norm as a way to resolve disputes, now online mediation has become the norm on how to mediate cases. And I oftentimes think about this change, this idea, going from the panic of the early days of the pandemic when the courts shut down and people couldn't be in person, people couldn't be near each other, and everyone was confused and concerned, and rightfully so, worried about the state of everything. But I often think about words of Albert Einstein: in the midst of every crisis lies great opportunity. You know, obviously I can't foresee what would have happened to mediation if the pandemic had not occurred, but I would argue that as we look back now, years later, we see that the manner in which and the way that which in which cases are mediated is far more advanced than it was prior to the pandemic. And so let's start first with the idea of some of the advantages of online mediation. And then I'll speak of the challenges. And then from there, we'll talk about a broad look at the mediation process from start to finish. And I'll discuss some of the nuances of online mediation that might be somewhat different than mediating in person. Also, we'll talk about different strategies, different techniques that I have personally used and have found very helpful when mediating online. I recognize that a number of people watching this presentation possibly have mediated before, whether in person, online, many of whom are watching this might have only mediated as an advocate, sometimes maybe as a neutral, or possibly people watching are clients or participants in mediation who might be more interested. This presentation is designed to educate not only those who wish to become a neutral, but I think it'll also be helpful for advocates and participants of mediations to maybe rethink some of the things they're doing differently online versus in person, and maybe also think about some strategies that would be helpful for future mediations. So we start with the idea that as mediation advanced into its online state, there are certain advantages. Here I listed a dozen advantages that I came up with. There are probably more. For example, one of the most common and obvious is that there is an ability now to participate from anywhere. Prior to the pandemic, it was not uncommon to have an attorney in Northern California on one side, an attorney in Southern California, mediator maybe in Orange County or San Diego, and an insurance agent or a representative coming from the East Coast, and maybe a client based in the Midwest. And in the old days, and I use that with quote unquote old days, prior to the pandemic, when in-person mediations were the most prevalent, majority of the time, people were expected to travel to the same location. And oftentimes there would be situations where before the mediation even begins, it's already difficult to get everyone in the same place at the same time. So obviously with Zoom, Teams, and other technologies like that, it's much easier. People can be anywhere in the world as long as they have a connected device that's connected to the internet and they can participate in the mediation. That also leads to flexible scheduling. And it makes sure the right people can attend. In the past, I remember many times as an advocate where you're mediating all day and then 3:30, 4 in the afternoon, it comes out that one of the other parties or one of the clients in the other room has a 7 o'clock flight and that they have to get back to wherever they're going. By then, they have to leave and there's traffic. And so we have to get the case settled the next hour and a half or else we're done, right? We don't have that problem anymore. Right people can be there and stay there the whole time. This obviously saves time, saves money, and ironically, or not ironically necessarily, but interestingly, it negates the conversation about having a quote-unquote neutral location. The internet's a neutral place for anyone. It's an option for everyone, and there's no debate over who's going to host mediation or will it be at a neutral location brought by the mediator. At times, you know, and the hope is that the mediation can be more comfortable for everyone. people can join from the comfort of their home office or their office, or possibly maybe their hotel room. Or if they're on vacation, they can join from wherever they have internet. Doesn't matter, but hopefully people are more comfortable. It allows for people, the mediator, to use breakout rooms more strategically. When mediating in person, it's very difficult to go into a room and point to three people and say, hey, you come with me, you two over there, everyone over here, and facilitate conversations in that manner. It's possible, it's just difficult. But interestingly enough, in Zoom, as the mediator who hosts the Zoom meeting, it's relatively effortless to move people to different rooms or to make sure that conversations are taking place with the right people in the right rooms. This also allows for joint sessions, especially in Southern California or in California in general, where joint sessions are not always the norm. It does allow for the possibility to tailor a joint session to a specific goal. It gives the mediator the option as well, which is an interesting nuance, to mute everyone. If you want to have a joint session, you don't want anyone to start advocating for their client or causing any sort of potential for debate, you just tell everyone ahead of time, we're going to be muted. I'm going to say a few words. I want to talk about this and that. And we can then discuss this narrow issue. Again, that's much more difficult to do in person. Likewise, document sharing can become much easier online using the share screen function or whatever other necessary mean, like email. Now you can share documents in real time. Right now I'm giving this presentation using the share screen. And in my mediation practice, I quite often use the share screen, only with an understanding that the documents I'm looking at and sharing are not confidential, or there's no reason I can't share with that party or those people in that room. But also, oftentimes, the subtlety of sharing a document rather than explaining what's on it leads people to come to their own conclusions, so you don't have to tell them that. I was fortunate enough to work with a tremendously successful, respected mediator in LA when I was first starting out, and he was kind enough to let me shadow him. And I loved the way in which he had this key document that had not been signed by the one party, but they were relying on it heavily in their brief. They talked about this document and how important it was, and it was the reason for this, the plaintiff's termination of her employment, and it was such a crucial thing. And then you get through a stack of 300 pages of documents and nobody ever signed it. There was no way to authenticate the document. It could have been made the week before. And rather than go into the room and show that client, that party, why they were wrong and why they were going to lose a trial, he let them talk about the document and slowly scrolled through the other documents until he got to that point and just left it there and paused and waited. And I sat there just watching, like eating popcorn, thinking about how great this was. And then as the attorney and the client slowly stopped their conversation, stopped their train of thought, they looked at it and said, oh, it's not signed. Huh. Give us a minute. We'll talk and we'll be right back with you. That's what they did. And the case gets settled shortly thereafter, right? And these are the kinds of things that can be done now that were a little more difficult when we were in person. Finally on there, I wrote the mirror effect. What I call the mirror effect, it has different meanings, but what I like about the mirror effect is the fact that most people, when they're on Zoom or Teams, they have the viewpoint of themselves, the camera of themselves, just like I do here. I can see myself talking. And when I see myself talking, it reminds me to, at times, focus on the words I'm saying a little more closely and kind of mirror to myself. You don't lie to yourself in the mirror. You're not going to say things you wouldn't say otherwise, hopefully, if you're forced to look at yourself in the mirror. I recognize that nothing is perfect. And I'm not here to say that Zoom or Teams or anything else save mediation, or that this is the savior of the legal world. Rather, I hope people realize that Zoom, Teams, and other technologies are another means to progress mediation, but they are not without their own challenges. So some of the challenges that are commonly understood include the risk that people are going to be less engaged if they weren't forced to take a flight across the country or to spend thousands of dollars of travel or to deal with 2 hours of rush hour traffic. Or for that matter, they weren't forced to put shoes on, right? Maybe they're showing up in shorts and a t-shirt. Maybe they're there's a risk they aren't going to take it as seriously, or they're not going to be as engaged. They're at their house or their office where there's 100 other things going on and they're not fully there. Other things like distractions, dogs come in, kids come in, partners and attorneys come in and out. And there's always the risk of that. There's a risk of people phoning it in. They're just going to, yeah, of course I'll participate because the court said I have to, or because we have a cutoff date. But you know, this case, it's crazy anyways. I'll show up and I'll be made available by phone, right? Or I'll be available on Zoom if you need me. There's a risk of that, right? But that being said, each of these risks, I like to think about how do I turn that challenge into an opportunity, right? So the fact that people might be likely to phone it in, I also recognize that means that in theory, people who are not available can become available. If there becomes an authority issue later on, well, great, let's get so-and-so on the phone. Send them the Zoom link. Here it is. Other times people worry about screen fatigue. And that's a real thing. I get exhausted, full day of mediation, going over 8 hours sometimes, staring at a screen, and I get exhausted. I know the participants get exhausted. But what do I do about that? I use that as an opportunity. I show up in their room and I say, man, we have been going at this for 6 hours today. I'm tired. My computer screen's tired. How are you doing? And the odds are they're tired too. And that might be the breakthrough you need to get a real conversation about how this case resolves. Other things, people are scared of technology. You know, you deal with it. You get them a link ahead of time. You tell the attorneys, hey, you know, your client might be a little nervous about technology. If there's any way I can help, let me know. There's connection issues at times. I use that as an advantage as well. Hey, no matter what happens, your Wi-Fi cuts out, I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. You got me for the whole day, right? You don't worry about it because I'm here. And I got great Wi-Fi. I get the best Wi-Fi that I can possibly get. And it won't cut out, just like I won't quit. The other thing is obviously less comfortable. There's a risk that people get less comfortable. They're either maybe, you know, I mediate a lot of employment cases. And sometimes the plaintiff in the case might not live in the nicest house, or they might have seven other people living with them, or they might not have the best Wi-Fi connection or have nice clothes to wear that they want to wear. That's fine. I try to make them as comfortable as possible. But I also, if I think that's an issue, we'll discuss that with the attorney representing them beforehand to make sure that they're comfortable, to make sure that they understand that this is not a judgment of them or where they live or where they're calling from. I also say you can use a Zoom background. I don't use a Zoom background myself because I want it to be more genuine. I want people to see where I am. It's nothing fancy. I intentionally put a few books on a bookshelf. I intentionally have a printer right here because at times, the metaphor of getting to the printer is something that makes sense in the case. I have a few pictures that I took, one in Machu Picchu before law school when I was called myself an adventurer for a few months and decided to go travel through Peru and volunteering and seeing the country. It gives me time when I'm looking at it in reverse to think about bigger picture items. I also have a picture of my, I took on my honeymoon in Bora Bora, these beautiful over the water bungalows and how pristine the water was and how we were in the middle of the ocean with very little security and very little ability to seeing beyond the horizon and just the peace and the peace and quiet and the ability to remind participants in mediation that there is more out there than what might be bothering them in this case. That being said, I also have a few books. I don't have every legal book that I have. I don't need to look like I'm in a library. Personally, I think too many things can distract, but I intentionally let people see my background. But I also tell people, if you're coming from somewhere you don't want to see the background, put a Zoom picture of the Golden Gate Bridge up, put an ocean picture, put something really fun, and we'll make a joke out of it and we'll move on. It's fine. So now we'll spend some time talking through the various phases of mediation, and I'll spend extra attention to how there might be a slight nuance when mediating online as opposed to in person. And I'll start with the caveat of that mediation is an art. And so these five phases are what I understand to be that commonly known in the mediation in the United States. And these are the phases that are not necessarily obvious at times. And I would argue, and I think the best mediators would agree, that mediation is an art and these are all organic, right? And so we start with the idea of convening the mediation. This is the starting point. This is might include a phone call or an email from an attorney or a client saying, hey, we have this issue, we have this case. We wanna see if we can talk about how we get it settled. It could include a call to my case manager, one of my case managers who says, hey, I have this person who called me or this attorney who called me, can we mediate? Sometimes it's very straightforward and it just is, how do you get everyone there and then start the process? Other times it's more complicated. We'll talk about that specifically. We'll also talk about openings. When we start a mediation, how do we open? How do we start? What do we say? Then we'll focus on communicating. Every good mediation requires communication. And then we'll talk about negotiating. Again, these are not hard and fast things. I will never say in a mediation, okay, we have finished the communicating phase. Let's negotiate now. No, that's awkward. That's uncomfortable. And it's unnecessary. But at some point, there might be a conversation about money. There might be a conversation about how do we get this resolved and what is it going to take? And at some point, someone might say to me, listen, we're just ready to talk about the numbers. We don't want to talk about the faxing or the law. We just want to get to the bottom of the numbers, right? And then somewhere through that process, there will be the closing. And the closing oftentimes is the most important of the mediation process. Assuming that everything else was done correctly, then the closing is where the case resolves and you make sure you have a durable, enforceable agreement that everyone is on board with. And so what we'll do is we'll talk about each of these phases in turn with a specific focus on how it might be different in the online mediation context. First, convening. Again, in layman's terms, this is getting everyone to the bargaining table. Just like if you're going to buy a used car, you have to get there, you have to show up, and you have to start the process, right? So when convening a mediation, we talk about, well, first, who will participate? When will the mediation be? Where will it be? Will it be online? Will it be in person? And who needs to be there? Do you have case deadlines that are affecting how we schedule the mediation? I'm fortunate enough to have excellent case managers who do a lot of this background work without even thinking of it on a regular basis. They get contacted by attorneys or other staff and they'll have the answers ahead of time. They know my schedule, they know what's going on, and they know with whom I've worked usually, and we can talk about, is there a conflict or can we mediate this case? But what I will do usually is check in with the attorneys and confirm the case deadlines are gonna be okay with this date. There's no additional discovery needed. If we're pre-litigation, okay, that's great. Are you going to share documents ahead of time? Is there any information you would need or your client would need before the mediation takes place? Is there any information you want the other side to know before the mediation takes place? In the pre-litigation context, that oftentimes is no, but at times it might be really important. The goal of convening the mediation is a few different things, one of which is to ensure confidence in both me as the mediator, but also the process of mediation. And so as we look at mediation generally here, and this is both in person or online, we have to make sure that everyone is aware of that process and is willing to participate in that process and has that confidence in the mediator and the process. At that time, if the mediation will take place online, then I'll ask, does everyone have familiarity with online mediations? If you have clients who have never mediated online, what are they nervous about? What are they concerned about? How are they at using a computer? Do they have any questions? What can I help with? Are there any special issues? For example, does the plaintiff in the case have three kids who are going to be there in and out of the room the whole time? Are they a newborn mother who has to be nursing in between sessions in the mediation? Whatever it happens to be, I like to know that in the convening stage before we even get there, so I can make sure everyone's taken care of. And if there's any reluctance, whether to mediate at all or to mediate online, I try to address those head on. I try to make sure that everyone knows we're there for the right reasons with the same goals of getting the case out. In the convening stage as a mediator, and so this goes equally for those who want to be a mediator, who are mediators, or who are either advocates or clients or participants in a mediation. I often think back to Ben Franklin, who said, "By failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail." I love that quote because to me, the choice is yours to make. And if you don't make a choice, you have made that choice, right? It's the same thing in mediation. We are here to get the case settled. And if the case is not settled and you are saying you don't want to settle it for whatever reason, then that's a choice, right? To do nothing is still a choice. And to not prepare for a mediation is preparing to fail. In my practice, I spend significant time preparing for mediations, not only focused on the law and the facts, but also the people, those who are involved. I understand who's going to be there, what their goals might be, what they might approach a certain set of facts or issues with. So preparations is huge. And when I talk about preparation, I talk about as a mediator, does everyone have mediation statements? Have they submitted them on time? Have they submitted key evidence? I read them front and back multiple times. I read them with the idea that I also think about not only what's in the mediation statement, but also what's not there. What have they not said? I think about the relationships of those who are involved in the dispute. In an employment context, obviously, former employees versus current employees. Those are different relationships at times. I also hold pre-mediation calls in almost all my mediations. And I make them informal. I invite the attorneys separately to talk to me. And in the 10 to 15 minute phone call, I will oftentimes learn so much that will set the mediation in the correct trajectory before we even get started. Oftentimes it's questions about things like the relationships between the attorneys or the parties or whatever it happens to be. What concerns does everyone have? What are we thinking about in terms of the goals here? I also, obviously I know the legal authority like the back of my hand, but if there's any certain unique thing, I might double check that. And then I also want to know the history of the dispute. Why are we here? Special considerations when we're mediating online. Again, my office setup. I have this set up in this way because I think this is the way that I would want mediator to approach. I have a standing desk, goes up and down if I need it to. But I keep it up most of the time because number one, I want my health is my wealth, right? I want to be healthy. I want to be moving around. I don't like to be stagnant in anything in life, but not necessarily in work as well. But there are times where I might be having a difficult conversation and I want to appear in such a way that it makes sense to sit down. I also take my jacket off from time to time. If it's a day that I think it's important to relax a little bit or to show them that I'm working hard, I take my jacket off. I might take my tie off. It just depends. I use a real background, but I know plenty of mediators and attorneys who love to use a Zoom background. Also background noises. I have a dog who sometimes wants to come in and wants to go to the bathroom or wants to go outside, whatever it is. That happens. Sometimes participants also have a dog. We'll talk about that. Zoom links, if you have a case manager or if you do it yourself, make sure you sent the right Zoom link out to everyone and make sure that it's something that everyone can click on and get right there. I also like to know and I like to help out. Will the parties be physically with the attorneys? Are we going to have to worry about the attorneys in one place and the parties somewhere else and connectivity issues? Will there be one conference room with four attorneys and three clients? If so, how are we going to approach that? What if we have to have separate conversations? Breakout rooms. I always set up, and I encourage mediators to set up more breakout rooms than you think you will need. There's no reason not to. If you have 17 breakout rooms there and you only use 4, then nobody cares. They'll never know. It doesn't matter. But once on Zoom, once you set up a breakout room, it's difficult, if not impossible, to add more. I also think about who is going to be in what room. Primarily, in my experience, I don't mediate with joint sessions as a de facto. I use joint sessions sparingly when it makes sense for the dispute. And those only are times where I know the people who are in that joint room are able to and willing to have a conversation without making it argumentative and for a specific goal. So I set up the breakout rooms and I manually put people in the room with their attorneys in the correct room. And if there's ever a doubt, if someone shows up and just says iPhone number 2, I go and ask, who are you? You're welcome. Who are you? How can I help you? Where are you going? I have heard horror stories from attorney clients of mine who had mediators that accidentally put the wrong people in the wrong room and didn't realize it until too late. One example that comes to mind is that there was a pre-litigation matter where the defendant had insurance involved, but they didn't want the plaintiff and the plaintiff's attorney to know that because it was pre-litigation and it was a situation where they wanted to try to get the case settled before it went to litigation. They were willing to put lots more money on the table because there was insurance, but at the same time, they didn't want the fear for them was that if the plaintiff or plaintiff's attorney knew that there was insurance involved, then the settlement demand would increase threefold or whatever. And that mediator wasn't paying attention, didn't know who someone was, and put him in the plaintiff's room. Turns out that was the insurance carrier representative. So needless to say, the client told me that as in one of my first mediations with that client because they were explaining why they were on the lookout for different mediators. So I am very careful, and I encourage everyone to be very careful about who is going into which room. Finally, when mediating online, I always have mediation briefs and the exhibits from all parties ready to go. I have them saved on my desktop or in a folder or whatever it is, so that if during the mediation at any point I need to refer to anything or share a screen or whatever it happens to be, I don't waste anyone's time trying to find that. It's all ready to go. And on that same token I mentioned earlier, I don't share things unless it is not confidential. If it's confidential, doesn't want to be shared, whether it's a document or there's information, then you have to think about what you're doing and make sure you don't run afoul of that confidence. Speaking of confidentiality, I'm not going into great length on that. I could give a whole hour-long presentation or longer about confidentiality, ethics, etc., mediation, but it is worth remembering, whether in person or online, that mediation confidentiality means that no evidence or anything said in the mediation is admissible or subject to discovery, right? And so it doesn't necessarily mean that everything told to a mediator in one room is not allowed to be told to the people in the other room. Sometimes attorneys and their clients misunderstand that and think, well, because you're telling a mediator something, they're not allowed to tell anyone that ever. No, it just means that the things that are said in mediation cannot become admissible or subject to discovery. Also, it's worth keeping in mind there are limits to confidentiality. Again, I won't go into heavy detail here. Read the rules yourselves. They're constantly evolving. But inadmissible doesn't necessarily mean that what's discussed in a private meeting cannot be disclosed in the other room. Also, remember, if you're doing a mandatory settlement conference, and I volunteer for those from time to time when I'm able to, that doesn't mean that it's a mediation. A mandatory settlement conference is specifically a creature of statute. And in that statute, it specifically said that we do not have mediation confidentiality. And it's amazing to me how many attorneys, very intelligent, very respectful attorneys and clients, that don't fully understand the difference between a mandatory settlement conference and a mediation. That being said, to step back from it all, when I'm mediating or when I'm conducting a settlement conference, I always make sure to ask the parties if there's anything that they've shared with me documentarily or verbally, that they want me to keep in confidence. I recognize that my reputation, my good name is based on my ability to keep confidential things that are required to or requested to be held in confidence. But it's worth being aware of these issues. One more thing with confidentiality and the online context. I personally use a mediation agreement before a private mediation. I have make sure that all the parties and everyone participating reads it, has it well in advance, and signs it to confirm that they are willing to proceed in the manner where it is a confidential mediation. In that, I have tweaked my mediation agreement to include specific provisions related to online mediations. I encourage those who use mediation agreements as a mediator to do the same. For example, this is not exhaustive, but it's clear that you cannot record the mediation. I don't want someone recording my mediation. I don't want people coming later on trying to use it as evidence against another party. Another issue is being cognizant of others nearby who might overhear. If someone's, you know, a client or the attorneys at home and their spouse or significant other, their family, their friends happen to be in the room next door and they come in and out and they might overhear things. I don't know how thin walls are in the room in which the participants are mediating, but it's worth being cognizant of that. Also, in the same vein, be wary of friends or family who appear midway through the mediation. Just like in the in-person context, when the person, maybe oftentimes it's a client, a plaintiff or one of the defendants or something, gets a phone call from their spouse, significant other, friend who's an attorney, whatever it happens to be, who all of a sudden has a different opinion than the attorney representing that party, right? They're getting too little or spending too much or they're offering too much, whatever it happens to be. I'm wary of that because it happens from time to time. Also, again, ensure people are never put in the wrong room. I cannot emphasize enough how important it is to take that extra second to confirm that you understand that iPhone number two is so-and-so, or that the name on the Zoom link that pops up is the correct person. Okay, now on to the second phase of mediation, the opening. So there's different thoughts from mediators in general, whether in person or online, on the opening. The textbook way in which I was trained as a mediator is to conduct an opening, number one, and to conduct an opening in such a way as to welcome everyone, to give them that confidence that you are the mediator to help them get their case resolved, and the confidence that this is the process and the day in which to resolve this dispute. And to do so in such a way that brings everyone to the same table to begin the conversations that will work towards resolving the case. In the opening, I try to elicit or try to show optimism with an understanding of the goals for the mediation, getting the case resolved, waking up tomorrow knowing that this matter is no longer affecting your daily life, that this lawsuit will not need to proceed beyond today. And that I have the confidence that I've done this hundreds of times before and I will do it hundreds and thousands of times going forward. And that I have the confidence to help you in this path to get this case resolved. And that I'm committed. Again, I'm not sitting down. I will be standing up all day and I might be running back and forth. And I'm here running the marathon, committed to getting this case settled and helping you get this case settled. And all with the goal of connection. Of connecting with the attorneys, the clients, and ensuring that when difficult conversations are to take place, they're not coming from me individually, but they're coming with my understanding, my facilitation and evaluation of things that brings it in the most positive light, that the connections that we've built during this process allow them to make their informed decisions. And so when I first talked about opening, I said, number one, whether you do an opening, and whether two, the way I do the opening. Question of whether to do an opening obviously is one that makes it part of the art of mediation. I know some mediators who work with similar attorneys they've worked with hundreds of times before or dozens of times before, they wouldn't dream of wasting their time with an opening. It really depends on the case. When I work with attorneys that with whom I've worked multiple times, I come in there and I say, good morning, how are your kids? How's everything else? And we have a conversation, and it's a much less formal way to start that process. But when I know that the client, maybe I don't know the client personally, or maybe the client might be someone with whom I haven't mediated before, then I'll make sure to include those important issues in the opening, right? And the opening might be something where they don't even realize this is an opening. Again, it's a nuance that allows the phases to be more organic. Should I walk into a mediation and go up and tap my microphone and say, okay, I will begin with my opening. Good morning, everyone. We are here. No, of course not. What a waste of everyone's time. I've lost at least half the people instantly by doing that. And so I want to kind of step back and make sure everyone thinks about the opening, not in terms of a speech given to just bore everyone and get it off your chest, but really an opportunity to welcome everyone and instill the confidence this is the case that's going to settle today. When mediating online, some things to take into account are that, again, I want everyone to feel as welcome as if they just came into my office, my home, and I'm offering them drinks, food, whatever it happens to be. And I want everyone to feel welcome regardless of what's behind their screen, regardless of where they're located or whether they like computers or not. I don't ignore anyone. If there's someone who hasn't spoken in the beginning part, I might make the second time I'm in that room an opportunity to say, hey, how are you doing, so-and-so? You know, or I see you're on mute. Is there anything you want to add? Right? Because until I speak to everyone, I don't know what they're thinking. I also don't know who's really making decisions when I'm not there until I find that out. Again, same goal of explaining why we're there, what the goals are. The goal is to get the case settled today so everyone can move on from today. And it's an opportunity to start listening and observing. So at times there are attorneys or clients who I'll get two words out and already they're jumping right into the facts. And they're so upset about this case or whatever it happens to be. I'm not going to cut them off and tell them, wait, I got to do my opening first, then you can talk. Of course not. I'm going to let them tell me everything that's important to them, get it off their chest, and we'll go from there. And I do so with what I call relaxed formality, right? I dress formally. I work formally. I have a very strategic approach to things. But at the same time, I want people to be comfortable and to share with me and to explore things with me in a relaxed manner. Third phase. Again, this is an organic situation. This happens oftentimes in the same conversation of the opening. It's communicating. And my goal here is threefold. It's to connect, to reflect, and to dissect. And I use the word connection a lot, but it's intentional because my experience is that there are a certain percentages of cases that are just going to get settled no matter what I do or don't do, as long as I don't mess it up, right? And I think most mediators won't admit that. But I admit it because there are some cases that they just need to get settled. Everyone wants to get the case settled. Plaintiff has $1 amount in mind or a range. Defense has a dollar amount or range in mind. And as long as the zone of potential agreement is big enough and close enough, then I have to go out of my way to try to get the case not settled. So there's a percentage of those cases, right? But I'm looking for the cases that might have a chance of settling, but people aren't sure whether they're willing to fully commit yet, or whether today's the day, or whether this is really a informed decision that they want to make, right? And so that's what I try to find the X factor, the ability to get cases settled when others might think it's not the day or not the case to be settled. And the connection is how I've found, in a genuine way, I genuinely enjoy people, I enjoy learning about people, but the connection is oftentimes the difference between a case that settles or one that just continues to go through litigation because just wasn't the time, wasn't right. I also look at the reflection of why we're there, whether it's through the story of the plaintiff, the defense, or whomever it is that's there, reflecting on what they saw What are their stories, and why are they part of this multiple story situation that led us to here? And then as I go through, I use the word dissect. Others might use an evaluative stance. But I look to dissect kind of the factual and legal issues at play, and to do it in such a way where I'm not going to be banging on my table explaining to people why they're going to lose a trial and why they should either take less money or pay more, but in such a way as to draw inferences and conclusions from the parties or from the attorneys into risks that might be there and an evaluation. So do an evaluation of the issues without specifically telling them this is what I'm doing. And so part of the communication, again, I'll leave there, is looking at what's verbal and nonverbal, what's not being said, in addition to what is being said. And I know it's ironic that I'm speaking for an hour here, but in my mediation practice, I listen more than I can talk, than I talk. And I do so because I know how this can play out. I've already written the book in my head of how this can play out, but I want to see how it does play out based on the actors in front of me. I want them to make their own conclusions and to tell me what they want to tell me, so that I can understand their needs and help them to get their case solved. Very briefly, in the world of communication, and this is more directed to attorneys, to remember the duties of truth and truthfulness and candor. You know, we can't make a, no, lawyers cannot knowingly make a false statement of material fact or law, right? But there's not an affirmative duty to inform an opposing party of relevant facts. As a mediator, this comes up from time to time because many mediators are attorneys and the rules do apply, but sometimes parties will ask me a direct question that I've been specifically told not to answer by the other side for confidential reasons or whatever. How to address that, whether it's with a question, whether it's with a, what do you need that information for? It depends, right? But something to keep in mind. When mediating online, other things about communicating, the manner in which you approach your computer, looking at the camera, standing to the side, or having your chin down here, whatever it happens to be, affects oftentimes how people perceive you. And so I'm very cognizant of standing full attention. I don't look down at my phone. I'm not here on my other computer doing something. I direct my attention to the person speaking. And I constantly am keeping an eye on others if there are others in the room. But I recognize that it's most important to connect and to focus on the people that are right there. Again, connection's huge. And I know the sales mantra of always be closing, I would switch that somewhat to always be connecting, right? Every little thing, when a dog comes into someone's room or a kid runs in or there's noise in the background, oh, I hear it's garbage day, whatever it is. That's another opportunity to connect with people. Also, I, from time to time, check in with everyone. How are we doing? Are you good? Did you get lunch? Have you eaten yet? Do you need a snack? Are you hungry? Do you need coffee? Same thing with Wi-Fi computer issues. If your Wi-Fi cuts out, I'm still here. That's a beautiful thing to say. That says more than just, I have good Wi-Fi. It says, I'm committed to the process and I'm not going anywhere. I also intentionally just looked down at my phone, but I did such because when I'm mediating, I'm fully here. I'm not answering phone calls. I'm not texting people unless it's intentional. It's part of the case. But communication is huge. Now, almost to the meat here, we're getting to the negotiating. This is where mediators help to broker the deal. I have in the corner there, timing is everything. You go too soon, you start talking about money too soon. You start talking about, well, let's get this case settled too soon. You run the risk of offending people and making them think you didn't listen to them. And so there's a definite nuance to knowing when to talk money and when to negotiate and when, you know, it depends on, has there been an opening demand? Has there been an opening offer? Where are we in the negotiation before you got to mediation? Whatever it happens to be. And as the negotiation takes place, whether in person or online, we talk about interests, not positions. Okay, so they demand an X, but what do they really want? they want to get this case settled because they want to move on with their life, whatever it happens to be. At times in the negotiation process, I'll be tired. So I know other people are tired. They're exhausted. They're frustrated. I address that head on, and I encourage you to do the same. Man, this has been a long day. Wouldn't this be nice if you didn't have to worry about these issues anymore? What if today was the day where you get to put this all behind you? Do you think trial is going to be easy? Do you think trial is going to be fun? Whatever it happens to be. And be strategic. As a mediator, it's amazing to me how important it is to plan what my goal of a certain conversation is, and then to go and have that conversation. And if my goal is just to talk for a little bit and then get a number out of them or whatever it happens to be, then so be it. But to strategize, to really think about what the goal is and how I'm going to accomplish that has been so helped me to be so successful in mediations. Considering the timing of certain things, considering, and then also controlling my emotions. We might have a conversation with someone in one room and people are screaming and there's tears and it's a complete, you know, upsetting situation. They're screaming at everyone. I come back. I leave the room. I take a break. I always have trail mix here. Eat a couple of nuts. I always have coffee or tea, water. I take a break. And then I go back into the other room with my strategic conversation ready. If I bring the energy from one room to the other room, I only do that when it's intentional. It will not serve everyone if I walk in the room and say, what is going on in that room? They're a disaster. Everyone's a mess. And I add panic to this room. No, that wouldn't do anyone any good. So control your emotions, be strategic. And when mediating online, again, take breaks between the rooms. Take care of yourself. Trail mix is how I do it. I remind people in mediation to take care of themselves. I also look at them and say, well, I'm going to be in the next room for a while. While I'm there, can you help me to understand this issue or these documents? Or can you find this for me? Or while I'm there, why don't you go get lunch? Why don't you go order something? Why don't you go get a cup of coffee and then I'll come back? Why don't you use the restroom? Whatever it happens to be. And then I check in strategically. There comes times in some mediations where one party needs additional time. They're talking to assurance adjusters far away, or they're dealing with an issue that they need to work through. And I don't want the people in the other room to think that I'm just ignoring them. When I was an advocate, I would sometimes hear mediators down the hall who are talking to their golf buddies, figuring out what they're going to do on the weekend. And I always got frustrated by that because I thought, here I am. I came all this way. I'm here to get the case settled. And my clients are paying me. They're paying the mediator. And the mediator seems like they're working on what they're going to do for golf this weekend, right? I make sure I check in with people and say, hey, just so you know, I don't have the number yet. We're working on it. There's a lot going on there. I'll tell you about it in a little bit, but I want to make sure you guys are good and I'll be back as soon as possible. Right there. 15 seconds. Everyone knows they're being taken care of and they're not fuming because they think I'm out talking to my golf buddies to figure out what we're going to do this weekend or what tee time will be. Finally, the reason we're all here, closing. How do you seal the deal? This is where we have to decide how we're going to get people over possibly an impasse and towards the goal of the printer, right? The goal is to get the case settled, to seal the deal, to get the result that everyone's here to obtain. And how do we do that? In person and online, relatively the same, but just keeping in mind ways to deal with impasse, maybe ways to take a break. Hey, I'm going to go to the other room right now, take a break. I know we're stressed out, you know, whatever. I love to use the term that I've coined myself, which is that we're getting dangerously close to settling. We might be hundreds of thousands of dollars apart with the most recent offers and counteroffers, but I will tell people and I will signal to them, we're getting dangerously close. Based on the information I have from both rooms or all the rooms, we are working towards the correct goal of getting this matter resolved. So let's keep down that path and let's just figure out a way. Everyone's here for the same goal. Everyone wants to get it settled. And I think we're darn close, so let's figure out how, right? And use time to on your side. If you have a mediation schedule for the full day, that's one thing. If you've only done a half day, say, listen, it's been 3.5 hours. I think everyone's ready just to get there, to go to the finish line. When mediating online, number one, and again, this goes back to my thought that some cases are going to settle regardless of how excellent or terrible the mediator happens to be, as long as they don't ruin it. So don't get in the way of a good settlement. If it's going that way, and if it's going to go that way, then just keep everyone going that way. Acknowledge Zoom fatigue. Again, by the end of the day, I don't want people to leave the mediation exhausted and feeling like we didn't accomplish anything if the case doesn't settle. I want people to go and to be ready to settle the case. And if you're tired, then we use that time, acknowledge the exhaustion and say, great, let's get this case settled so you don't have to deal with it ever again. Again, breakout rooms can be helpful, joint sessions, if they're tailored to an effective goal, can be very helpful. And then this is really important. Know the value of offline conversations. This is something that was done in person and can be done in person, but I think is done easier and more effectively oftentimes online. By example, I had a case recently where in each breakout session with the attorney and his client, attorney was advocating, saying, we're going to take this to trial. There's no way. This is crazy. We're going to countersue, blah, blah, blah. And then I text him and say, hey, can we talk offline? So we do. We have a phone call separately. He's not in the same room with his client, so it's easy to do. And he calls me and I say, hey, what's really going on? I mean, because you know what the law is. In these facts, am I missing something? What's going on? And I say it politely because I'm not here to offend anyone. I'm not here to, you know, if I enrage him, then I've lost him and I've lost his client and all that. And he laughs and he says, yep, you saw it too. Well, we have these issues with the insurance and there's a potential malpractice claim outside, these other attorneys who were representing my client before me. And you know what? It's a disaster. But we have no choice but to fight because I don't think they're ever going to settle for where we want to sell. Bam. Case hinged on that. And with that information, we go back, get the case settled shortly thereafter. Right? And that was so easy. I didn't have to go into a room and say, hey, can I talk to you separately down the hall? Make it a big deal. He probably went back and told his client, just so you know, I talked to the mediator. But it changed the tenor of everything. And so when I went back into his room and he's still pounding the table and advocating for his client, I know what he just told me. And I understand that the needs and the interests so that we can get the case settled. So embrace the silences, the side conversations, and above all, humanity. It really is one of those things that when people see that you're a human, you're generally interested in their story and helping them to resolve their disputes, it's amazing what they will show you and tell you that will help you get to that goal. One other suggestion for breaking an impasse is when in doubt, sing. I'm not going to horrify all of you by singing any of these songs, but these 8 songs all come to mind at times and many more during mediation process. And what I do is I don't sing them, but I might just quote songs, quote a movie, quote something at some point. Instead of telling someone, hey, this is the best you're going to get, you're welcome and you better just grab it and run. I say, hey, you know, Steve Miller Band said, take the money and run. Right? Or Kenny Rogers loved to say, you got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, know when to run. Right, and it gets a laugh, and it usually, if it's done correctly, can get everyone to lighten the mood and kind of set the perspective of why we're here and why it makes sense for them to do what we're talking about. Rolling Stones are great as well. Any other things like that? These are helpful ways to kind of switch the narrative at times or change the perspective. And finally, the goal, the reason we're all mediators and is to help people get the case settled. And just because the case settles doesn't mean we are supposed to let up and just relax and just pop the champagne just yet, right? So the case settles, everyone's agreed on the key terms. What do we do from there? And this is specifically to online, right? In person, sometimes I had the experience as an advocate where Great. Someone's going to write out a term sheet. Here's the 3, 4, 5 key terms. And everyone's going to sign. We're done. Other times I was there until midnight because the parties or the attorneys wanted to get the actual long form settlement agreement signed by everyone before you walked out the door. That's fine too. Online, what do? Sometimes we look at confirming email. Does the mediator send it out? Does defense counsel, plaintiff's counsel, who sends it out? Do you copy the mediator? How do we know? What if there's 3 key terms and they haven't talked about the non-monetary issues or other things, right? Keep these things in mind and don't be surprised when a case settles and you haven't thought these through, right? The worst situation is being there and saying, well, I don't know. I don't know who's going to draft the long form settlement agreement. We haven't even thought of it, right? These are conversations that could have been held the week before and all you have to do is fill in the dollar sign. If it's possible to have the attorney share drafts of a settlement agreement before mediation, that's wonderful. The reality is it's not done as often as it should be in my experience, but at the same time, if it is done in the correct manner, where all we need to do is fill in the number, it already helps people psychologically get there before they even show up in person or online. Same thing, you know, as mediators, we have been trained, most of us have been trained, don't be the ones to draft the settlement agreement for them. You know, whether we send the confirming email, here's my understanding of what agreement was reached today, I think that's fine. Sometimes I worry if the attorneys send it to each other, it's not going to be worded the correct way, and they haven't been in the same room. I've been in each room all day. So it just depends. And then we talk about, going back here, enforceability. And I'm not going to read the whole California Code of Civil Procedure 664.6, especially because coming January 1st, 2025, it's going to change. And when this recording's up on the Beverly Hills Bar Association website, I don't know when you're going to see it. And if it's changed, then go ahead and look that up because I didn't put the new rule in yet. But for our purposes, a few years past, the rules were changed that attorneys who represent the party can sign a settlement agreement on the party's behalf. But obviously there's caveats there for civil harassment actions, et cetera. And my takeaway from this all is that I don't want to ever be in a situation where I have sat by while people think they're signing an unenforceable agreement. Right. I don't want a year from now or 6 months from now, a phone call or an email saying, hey, remember you helped us mediate that case? Yeah, one party changed their mind and we can't even enforce it because we didn't send the correct term sheet around. So just keep aware of this. Same thing here, miscibility of a settlement agreement. Something to keep in mind, the rules change, they're constantly being updated, but currently as of September in 2024, this is the evidentiary rule on that regard. And finally, there are situations in which not every case will settle. And I hate to say it, you know, I have some mediators that I love who say, I have helped people to settle 100% of the cases that have been in front of me. And then you wait for a second and they say, except for the ones where somebody else messed it up, right? Not every case will settle on the first day or the first attempt at mediation. It's just natural. But what I think the best mediators do that separates them from others is they don't give up. And so if I ever have a case that didn't settle, maybe it's pre-litigation, maybe it's something that just wasn't the right time, the right people weren't there, we had different expectations, we didn't have enough discovery, then I follow up and I make sure that whatever the issue was, I find out when it will be resolved and determining what can I do to help forward that goal? How can I help to make sure that the case will be resolved. And I encourage everyone to do that should you become a neutral as well. That being said, I appreciate all of your time. I thank you. And as a final thought, I will say, I personally have found the transition to mediation incredibly fulfilling. I think it's a lifetime goal of mine from when I was a young kid, seeing my 4 older siblings and their disputes and watching them interact with my parents almost as neutrals at times. I know this is the path for me. I will say it's not for everyone, but for those of you that decide to go down this path, I wish you all the best. And I hope You know, should you see this presentation and want to drop me a line, here's my email address, matt@laneadr.com. There's my website. Love to hear from you. I wish you all the best in your careers, no matter what you do. And thank you for your time.
You may be eligible for CLE credit in your state. Visit bhba.org/podcasts for more information.